Well, it's great to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart. Well, there's a new book out from the Bible Society called The Great Bible Swindle. And it argues that you can't really claim to be educated unless you have a knowledge of the Bible. Well, Greg Clark is the CEO of the Bible Society and is the author of this book. He's also a former colleague of ours here at CPX. And he's here in the studio to talk about the book. Great to have you in, Greg.
Great to be talking to you, Simon.
Now, the book is The Great Bible Swindle. What's the swindle?
Well, the swindle really is that somehow in Western society, we have convinced ourselves that you don't need to know the Bible in order to be just properly educated. I mean, Christian people love the Bible. They see it as a spiritual book. But it's even more than that. It's a book that's shaped our culture. And somehow we've got ourselves in the situation now in the 21st century where very few people emerge from their schooling with any knowledge of the Bible whatsoever.
Well, there'll be some people who will say that's just not a problem at all, but let's sort of investigate that a little bit further. But I want to pick up on something that's pretty early in the book. You've got a simple quiz which outlines a couple of questions that you reckon if you don't know the answer to all of these, then you don't have a good knowledge of the Bible.
You should get 100% or you're in trouble.
Okay, let's just throw a few out there. What is the first book of the Bible called? Who wore a fashionable coat which made his brothers jealous? Famous story. What happened at the wedding at Cana? How many disciples were there? How did Jesus die? I think most people get that, won't they? Which Bible character underwent enormous suffering and is well known for that? And lastly, there's more than this, but what kind of literature is most common in the second half of the Bible? Well, we went out onto the streets to ask a few people these questions. This is how it went. How many testaments does the Bible have?
That's a good question. I think it's 12, isn't it?
12.
Does that mean like how many carols or 12?
Well, I think 2.
4.
What is the first book of the Bible?
It's a Genesis.
Is that the chapter or is that a book? Okay, Genesis,
we're
yeah.
We're exposing our fraudulent religious lack of knowledge here.
You know the first book of the Bible?
No.
The last book of the Bible?
I'm going to go with the Apocalypse. Hang on, wait a minute. That's the Apocalypse was in the New Testament, was it? John?
How do you know this stuff?
Because that's when everyone goes to hell or heaven or something like that.
Who wore a fashionable coat which made his brothers jealous?
Jacob, something like that. Joseph.
James. Was it James? No.
What famous incident occurred at a wedding at Cana?
Oh, is this when everyone turned to salt? As in Donna Hay salt?
Which part of the Bible did Jesus write?
None.
The Old Testament?
That's a trick question, isn't it? Technically none of it, but also all of it.
Now, Greg, you make the point that the Bible has shaped our culture in profound ways, and to have no knowledge of this is an enormous lack. And on the book, the Vice-Chancellor of Sydney University, Michael Spence, says, a basic knowledge of the Bible is an essential part of the toolkit of any educated person. Without it, so much of the last 2,000 years of Western culture is either inaccessible or it's poorly understood. That's a big part of your argument, isn't it?
It is, and it's great to hear, you know, such an eminent educator as the Vice-Chancellor of one of our biggest universities saying such a thing, because it was university that taught me, really, that I was very privileged to know the Bible. I grew up in a family where I was given a Bible when I was 7 years old, and I just read it on and off, and still am doing so. But when I got to uni and studied literature, I realised that I was one of the few people in the class who actually knew what was going on in half of the books that we were studying. Everything from simple references to the names of characters or plot lines about people being forgiven for sins or redeemed from something or going through trials. And they all found their roots somewhere in the Bible. And I was just streets ahead because I actually knew what the authors were getting at.
Let's touch on a couple of these areas. One of your great loves is literature. What do we lack when it comes to our understanding of literature without the Bible?
Well, in Western literature, we need to start with an understanding of the history of it, that the writing of literature was often a response to the Bible itself. So some of the oldest poems we have in the language are about the Christian faith. I think of an ancient early medieval poem called The Dream of the Rood, R-O-O-D, which is actually a piece of wood. And this amazing poem just imagines what it was like to be the cross on which Jesus was crucified. And interesting to hear people thinking whether they know or not how Jesus died. You know, he was crucified. Now, there's an old poem based in a reading of the Bible, and you just see that through the history of literature, that the stories of Scripture and the theology of Scripture, the ideas of the Bible, are the thing that inform the writing of literature. And it goes through all sorts of genres. It's not just the sort of literature you study in advanced classes at university.
Well, I was about to say, there'd be some people out there, Greg, who might think they could, you know, pretty much get away without their medieval poetry.
I haven't read The Dream of the Rood recently. Well, I mean, I look at detective novels, which are often shaped in the Bible's way of telling the story of justice and mercy. Or fantasy literature, which is often drawing on the symbolism of the Bible. Take, for example, the very popular writer Garth Nix, fantasy writer. His most his best-selling series is called The Keys to the Kingdom. And this is a quote from Jesus in the Gospels, which I think very few of his readers would know.
What about art? What are we missing without the Bible?
Well, without the Bible, you've got kind of blank canvases and empty walls on the on all the churches and art galleries of the planet. The subject matter of art is so often the stories of the Bible. In different periods of art, that's been more true than other times. But even in modern art, often modern art is reacting against the Christian story. So if you don't know something of Jesus, of the rise of the church, of the Old Testament stories, for example, you're really not going to understand the subject matter. Arthur Boyd's a great example in Australian painting, keeps coming back to biblical themes.
Yeah, well, let's just think about this, because you mentioned in the book that you think the Bible has been caught up in a revolt against authority. Now, how is that? This is part of the story of how we've sort of leached our culture of the Bibles.
I think that's right, and it's probably why we're in this situation today, is that the Bible is seen as the thing we have to grow out of, or the thing that modern people need to leave behind if they're going to get anywhere. But the point I'm trying to make in this book is that we don't understand what we've got till it's gone, you know, to use the song. If you can't assume you'd get the kind of society we enjoy today without the Bible. And when you tease back through the history of how we got our legal system, how our medical system was shaped, our education system, the Bible is woven into that story in a way that built the society that we love. We would just have a different world if the Bible hadn't shaped it. And I'm not sure we'd be happy with that world.
Yeah, and you mentioned music as well as an important part of this, and we get your, you know, favourite band, U2, gets a mention, but plenty of others as well, people like Lady Gaga, Paul Kelly.
It's everywhere, it really is. I mean, it doesn't mean that these people, I hasten to add, I'm not suggesting all these people are believers in the Bible, Orthodox Christians and so forth. It doesn't work like that. Paul Kelly, for example, says he's not a believer as far as I know, but dragging his body back from a concert and throwing himself on the hotel bed, looking in the drawer of the hotel. He finds the Gideon's Bible and he starts reading, and the songs just start pouring out because he hasn't found anything more inspiring and more that connects more with reality than this book.
It seems so it's both an inspiration for a particular artists, but also sometimes something to react against. But either way, you need to know the stories to understand the material.
That's right. And you know, I quote in the book a line from another band I enjoyed as an angsty teenager, The Cure. It's called The Blood, and it says, "I'm paralyzed by the blood of Christ, and though it clouds my eyes, I can never stop." And it's that once you've heard the story, the powerful story of Jesus Christ in the Bible, you've read some of those incredible Old Testament accounts of people wrestling with God, they just don't leave you. They're so powerful to your imagination and powerful to your sense of morality and purpose in life, that if you are an artist, if you're a creator, you're going to come back to those very, very influential experiences you had reading the Bible.
Well, for a modern person, movies are the great storytelling. That's the great storytelling medium. You mentioned in the book that there's lots of themes and characters that are in very popular films that we all know and love, and come really out of these biblical ideas. What are some of your favourites of those examples?
Yeah, well, they say that the movie theatre is the new cathedral, and it's often true. And what you're watching on the screen, you know, if you don't know the scriptures, you're often in all sorts of trouble in understanding the storyline. But even movies, I mean, some of them are obvious. Things like Bruce Almighty, the comedy with Jim Carrey, you know, it's drawn on the Bible's idea of God to some extent. Films like the fabulous Coen Brothers film, A Serious Man, one of my favourites, is it's actually a reconstruction of the biblical book of Job. Now, you can watch the film without knowing that, but once you know that, it's such a richer experience to say, this is a modern man experiencing what that ancient character Job experienced in the Bible. And it does two things. One, it brings the story to life. And two, it gives the Bible a lot of credence because you can say it still seems relevant to the experience humans have today.
Okay, but are these specifically biblical themes or are they just human themes?
Sometimes they are. And of course, the Bible is about the experience of humanity and humanity's encounter with God. So there's going to be overlap there. But I'm often asked, you know, why should people study the Bible rather than other important texts? And if I'm going to, you know, if I'm going to promote the Bible, why aren't I promoting the Quran, classical literature, and so forth? My answer to that is, of course, I'd be very happy to promote those texts. People do need to know them. But even more than those texts, they need to know the Bible. And if we're not educating people in the Bible, they're going to miss the heart of Western culture. The Quran has not shaped Western culture. It's important now to who we are today and understanding the way the world is changing. But in order to understand how we got to where we are, the Bible is the central book. There really is no argument about that among anyone who has studied the history of ideas at all, whether they are Bible believers or not.
Now, you say in the book, and it's a really, really helpful book, I have to say, in terms of bringing some of these things to light. But you say that at the foundation of many of our cherished institutions is the biblical story. You talk about our universities, the law, our charities, even the foundation of modern science. So there's lots of things people can get their teeth into here and no doubt be controversial for some. But you also especially talk about the way the Bible shapes our view of ourselves and the valuing of human life. That seems especially important.
It is important, and I think it's important, again, because we enjoy a culture that was shaped by the biblical concept of human dignity and the fact that all people are equally valuable in the eyes of God, something you are taught in the Bible, and forgive me, you're not taught in all the religions of the world. This is a distinguishing feature of Christianity. You don't have to go very far outside of the Christianized world to see that if you've got a different understanding of the value of human beings, you build a different society where animals are given the same value as human beings. And these things that we enjoy have come from the scriptures in ways people can't trace back very easily now because they don't know it. And my argument is they need to know the book. Even if they reject its teachings in the end, they need to know what it has given us in society, what kind of high view of humanity the Bible has given us, and how much we'd lose if we threw that out.
Okay, well, you certainly make a strong argument for this being educational value, cultural value and so on. But I know you're the CEO of the Bible Society. There's another agenda going on here, isn't there?
Well, I tried to put my cards on the table early in the book and say, look, I'm mounting an argument here that you need the Bible to be educated. But I'm a Christian. I've found so much more in the scriptures. I've found a comprehensive story of how God connects to the world and an understanding of who God is through Jesus Christ. And the one thing I've tried to give people in the book is a key to the Bible. You know, it seems arrogant to offer a key, but I think Jesus as the centerpiece of the Bible is a really helpful key for those who haven't come to it before. If you think of trying to put all the different parts of the Bible together around an understanding of who Jesus is meant to be and who he is for you now, you're going to do pretty well.
Well, the book is The Great Bible Swindle. It's out now. Greg Clark's the author. It's great talking to you about it, Greg. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Simon.
Well, that brings us to the end of Life and Faith for 2013. This has been a year where we've covered everything from mindfulness to poetry, from drugs in sport to the origin of the universe. We've looked at things from Narnia to climate change, the film Gravity to Tim Winton's masterful writing. Also, belief and doubt and the Christian foundations of Western culture. We look forward to bringing you more of this analysis of how Christianity speaks into every area of life, offering a vision of redemption, beauty, and hope. We'll be back in 2014. I'll check you then.